Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends. Today, I'm going to be sharing some stories from viewers just like you, who have gone out on hunting trips and have had some less than okay times. Personally, I'm not really a hunter. I've never really had any urges or needs to feel like I need to go out and shoot an animal. But for people who do, they seemingly see a lot of strange things out there. So, without further ado, let's get into these creepy stories. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this channel going. Be sure to hit that like button and to subscribe. Get comfortable and get ready for some creepy stories that'll freak you out tonight. I have never been a huge believer in the supernatural, but I'm not closed-minded either. It's just I have never had an experience of my own. That is, until one night in early December of 2016. I was 16 at the time and was doing what I love best. That is, hunting with my father and grandfather. I have been an avid hunter since my dad brought me my first hunting license when I was just a mere age of 7. Throughout my life, I have hunted all kinds of game, from pheasants and turkeys, bears and foxes, to deer and elk. So it's safe to say, I am very familiar with the wildlife all over the United States. This particular encounter took place on my grandparents' property in southern Maine. They own 55 acres of land with a small river that runs through the southwest corner of the property. However, that time of year, that river is nothing but a mud pit. For a little more detail, the topography of the land is very hilly with steep inclines and deep valleys. The plan for the evening hunt was supposed to be a short one and was only supposed to take 2 to 3 hours. My dad and grandpa were supposed to come from opposite sides of the valley, and I would come down the hill, and we would all meet at the halfway point in the valley and walk out together. The valley was very easy to find, and it was an old logging road and was well marked. The idea was to push deer to each other. We had a late start, so there were only 2.5 hours or so of daylight left by the time I started my solo trek down into the valley. Before I started my hunt, I pulled out my phone and looked at the map of the property. I know, I should be able to walk down the hill without navigation, but I have a huge fear that I'll take a wrong turn and get horribly lost. What scares me most is pissing off my grandfather for making him wait for me at the rendezvous point. So to be safe, I looked at the map. The first part of the hunt started off without a hitch. It was making good time while stopping every once in a while trying to look for a deer sign. So far, there was nothing worth mentioning, but I was happy to be in the woods regardless. Things, however, became really bad, really quickly. As I mentioned, there wasn't much daylight left to begin with, so we took that into account. What we didn't take into account was that the storm came in like a bat out of hell with no warning. In an instant, the sky became dark as night, and the snow came down to the point where seeing more than 5 feet in front of you was damn near impossible. I had enough and began to haul my butt to the meeting point at the bottom of the hill. Once I finally reached the level ground, a wave of relief finally fell over me. I was cold, wet, and wanted a hot shower. Then my heart sank. I was not at the old logging road. In fact, I had no idea where I was. Crap, Everything I know about making out of situations like this tells me to stay calm. Forget about that, I am everything but calm. I knew I was down the hill, so I had the hope that my grandfather and dad were somewhere close by. Not even thinking about scaring any deer, I yell out, "Dad! Grandpa!" I took a momentary pause to listen for a response. All that I heard was the wind blowing through the valley and the sound of snowfall. Then I heard something I truly cannot explain. I heard, "Dad! Grandpa!" echoed back to me. What the heck? "Over here!" I yelled back, only to have, "Over here!" yell back to me. This time it was really close. Whatever was echoing me was moving fast. To heck with this, I pulled out my phone to try to call my dad or at least figure out where I am, but of course it was dead. The only thing I was sure of was the fact that I did not want to be in these woods any longer. I figured that if I walk in one direction long enough, I would eventually end up at a house or a road. I must have been walking for close to a half hour with no sign of, well, anything but more woods. The whole way, I had an uneasy feeling. It was like something was there, but it wasn't like it was watching me. It felt like it was stalking me. Every time I paused to get my bearings, I could hear the sound of the snow crunching under my footsteps. When I had enough, I called out, "Who's there?" Nothing but the sounds of steps circling me. Then I remember them stopping. I was able to pinpoint where the steps stopped. It was dead ahead of me. I looked out into the woods, and behind a large hemlock I noticed something duck behind a tree. It was quick, so I couldn't make out any details. But whatever it was tall and skinny, and was thin enough to hide behind a tree without being seen. By this point, I wasn't sure what my next move would be. I was too afraid to move forward to the hemlock. I had no interest in finding out whatever this creature was. I raised my rifle and pulled back the firing pin. I put a round into the tree, and almost instantly I heard the thing take off at warp speed. Thinking I got rid of this thing, I continued walking in the same direction. I thought if I could just get to a road, my dad and grandpa would be looking for me. So I carried on, and so did the storm. After another hour or so, with no other issues, I finally stumbled onto a paved street. Now I had to figure out how to contact my dad, so they could come pick me up. That is when I heard it again. "Dad! Grandpa! Over here!" The thing had still been stalking me. I fired off another round into the air, but it had no effect. The creature just kept yelling back to me, and it was getting closer. Once it sounded like it was almost on top of me, it went dead silent. I looked around and heard a welcome sound. It was my dad's truck coming down the road. Thank God. I piled in and began to tell my dad and grandpa everything. When my dad started to drive off, I looked behind me, and through the red glow of the taillight, I saw a tall figure duck behind another tree. I, to this day, never figured out what was stalking me in those woods. If anyone has any ideas as to what I encountered, I'm all ears. I can't be the only one who grew up in a small town with a few resident creeps. I'm not talking about criminals or stalkers, though. I'm talking about those people who live in the house on the hill, or at the end of the street. The people that everyone knows of, but nobody actually knows. Everyone else in town seems to agree that there's something not quite right about them, and they never have visitors. I'm sure you know the type, the tired old cliché. When I was a little kid, I spent a great deal of my time on my grandparents' farm in the foothills of North Carolina. I would explore all around their property, and most of the neighbors would let me explore their land too. However, there was one man who lived a few miles from the farm who my grandparents warned me I should never go near, and the neighbors all agreed something about him was a little bit off. The exact reasons people cited were varied, ranging from PTSD to an escape from a mental asylum, but nobody could say for sure exactly what his problem was. I always followed my grandparents' advice, and I never knocked on the door of the elegant, two-story farmhouse where the mysterious man lived. But I nevertheless found myself standing in front of that old farmhouse back in November of last year. Now, I'm a machinist by trade, but sometimes I work odd jobs on the side for some extra cash. I often do jobs using heavy machinery, mostly grading driveways or digging drainage ditches, so when I got a call asking about what my rate would be for removing about a dozen large tree stumps, I was excited at the prospect of an extra payday. However, when I arrived at the given address, I was a little bit more surprised to find that it was the oh-so-familiar home of the mystery man from my childhood. I slowly rolled up the long gravel driveway, suddenly trepidatious about meeting a man I had been so advised about avoiding. Finally, though, I reasoned with myself that surely the residence must simply be an old shut-in, and I scolded myself for being irrational and almost avoiding a perfectly good customer based on a childhood gossip. I knocked on the door of the farmhouse, and after a few moments the door swung open to reveal an elderly gentleman of about 80 years old. I introduced myself and he hobbled shakily out of the house to show me the stumps that needed to be removed. I gave him my estimate for the cost and he slowly nodded, saying,
That'll be fine. When can you start? The sooner the better.
We shook hands on a date and price, and as I got back in my truck to leave, I thought to myself that seemed far less scary than all the rumors might suggest. Although, as I looked over my shoulder to back down the driveway, a flash of movement from the tree line caught my eye. It was only there for a second, but I could have sworn I saw a person's face staring out from behind one of those trees at the edge of the yard. I had always been told that the man lived alone, but I figured it wasn't really that odd for someone to be visiting, right? Maybe it was an out-of-town grandchild exploring the woods, just like I had done as a kid. Anyway, I returned a few days later, and the stubborn walnut stumps proved no match for my old D7. Once I was done, I knocked on the door and informed the owner I had finished early and I would be billing him for fewer hours of work than anticipated. He smiled dryly and thanked me for my honesty, offering to pay me extra for finishing the job so quickly. I initially assured him that it was really no big deal, but then he made me a very tempting offer. He asked if I would like to come on and hunt on his land since it was the height of deer season at the moment. I was certainly interested, since this entire 250-acre property was ringed with barbed wire fences and no trespassing signs. In fact, everybody I knew avoided the place due to the rumors and the stigma surrounding the owner, and that meant I would probably have a chance at some pretty nice deer if I took him up on the offer. I eagerly accepted and thanked him for the opportunity, and so, as I had a free weekend, I headed out to his land again. Nearly the entire property was covered in dense woods and pine thickets, so this wouldn't be the usual post up in a tree stand and wait sort of hunt. No, this would be a real old-school deer stalking. It couldn't have been more than 40 degrees that day, and to make things worse, it was misting rain. It was great weather for hunting, but it certainly made me grateful for my thick clothing and warm socks. I followed a tangle of game trails through the thick woods and I saw plenty of deer tracks, even a few really large ones, all leading deeper and deeper into the pines and cedars. I should also mention that the woods were incredibly calm and peaceful since the gloom and chill of the rainy November day had practically put the entire forest to sleep. In fact, other than the occasional rustle of a small animal dashing through the damp underbrush, the only noise were my own footsteps and the soft patter of rain. The rest of the day passed in much the same way, but by 5:15 it was starting to get too dark to hunt, so I decided to turn around and start making my way back to my truck. Luckily, the rain mostly stopped, but a thick fog now hung in the damp evening air. I carefully retraced my steps as the woods became darker and darker. However, just when I was about to pull out my flashlight, I noticed that mine were no longer the only footsteps in the twilight thicket. I stood very still, listening to the movement in the brush as it drew closer. The footfalls were too loud to be a deer, and besides, even a herd of deer is careful and methodical as they move, pausing regularly and picking their way around any obstacles. By contrast, these footsteps were reckless and constant, and I could hear twigs and low-hanging limbs cracking. This, I realized, was the sound of a human traipsing through the woods. I quietly crouched and hunkered down behind the base of this large poplar tree. making myself small in its shadow. I was worried that whoever was coming might be a poacher, and I certainly didn't want to catch a bullet due to being mistaken for an animal in the murky darkness. As the footsteps grew closer, I realized that was definitely more than one person out here. And even worse, I couldn't tell exactly what direction they were coming from. I could hear voices too. At least two, and maybe three, but they sounded muffled and distorted in the thick mist. I held my breath as I listened closely, and I leaned out from behind the tree just enough to look in the general direction of the noise. There, about 20 yards away, was the soft glow of an old, incandescent flashlight bobbing through the fog, and silhouetted in the light, I could see three nightmarish figures. At first, I couldn't even make out any sense of what I was seeing. The three silhouettes looked so alien and bizarre, each one an amalgamation of human and animal features. However, on closer inspection, I realized that the mysterious shapes were actually people. Strange people. The one in the front was wearing a deer's skull and antlers atop its head, as well as a hooded cloak made from crudely cut animal skin. It was also carrying what looked like a shovel over its shoulder, and in its other hand it held a flashlight responsible for the glow. The second and third figures stood close together, and they both wore a collection of coyote tails like bandoliers across their bodies, along with coyote skulls adorning their hoods. As I squinted and looked more closely, I could see that they were carrying something between them. It was a large tarp or sack, and judging by how the two coyote men handled it, it was heavy. As I watched the surreal column move wordlessly through the undergrowth, there was suddenly a loud rustling in the brush behind me. I snapped around, struggling to bring my rifle to bear, but when I turned to face the noise, I saw it was only a fat opossum. The little thing just stared at me for a few moments before dashing away back through the woods. But I guess the noise of its passing had gotten the attention of the three animal men, because when I looked back around, the three were turning back towards me and had begun to walk in my direction. I held my breath and made myself as small as possible behind the poplar, and I silently flipped my rifle safety off. The deer man drew closer as my heart beat faster and faster. I didn't know for sure that these quote-unquote people would be hostile, but I also didn't want to pop out and introduce myself at the same time. The footsteps of the deer man were very close now, and if I listened carefully, I could make out the sounds of breathing on the other side of the tree. However, just when I was sure it was about to come around the tree, I heard one of the coyote men call out in the distance. I couldn't quite tell what he said, but I could make out the word, heavy, so I assumed he was complaining about whatever he was carrying. The light suddenly disappeared as it pointed back in the other direction and the footsteps receded into the distance. I must have waited a good 5 or 10 more minutes before getting up from my hiding place, unsure of whether or not the bizarre trio had truly left, but when I poked my head back around the tree, they were indeed gone. I wanted nothing more than to get the heck out of there ASAP, but I couldn't help going on and having a quick look at where they had passed. It didn't take me long to locate their footprints. Much to my relief, all three sets I found were normal shoe prints, no giant hooves or paws. However, as I shone my flashlight on the ground and investigated the footprints, something else caught my eye. I shined my flashlight further down the trail and sure enough, there were more drops and splotches. Further still, there was a larger puddle where the coyote man had stopped as the deer man had backtracked. A feeling of nausea brewed in my stomach as I realized the implications of this, and I quickly doused my flashlight to avoid broadcasting my presence. What I saw, right in the middle of the trail, was a glistening splotch of red-brown liquid that couldn't be anything but blood. Now filled with rising panic, I got moving back towards the trailhead as quickly and quietly as possible. The rain had started again, and in the foggy darkness, I could barely see a few feet in front of me, but I still only pulled my flashlight out when I absolutely had to, in case those people were still prowling around. Finally, I stumbled out of the woods at about 7:45 and I hastily jumped in my truck and pulled onto the road. I was pretty focused on getting out of there, but as I drove past the farmhouse, I did notice that no lights were on. There were no other cars in the driveway either, so whoever I had seen in the woods hadn't come in by that route. Once I was safely home, I called the sheriff's office and anonymously reported that I had seen some suspicious men in those woods. I didn't mention the animal skin cloaks or the various pelts and skulls. I don't know if there was ever an investigation, but nothing ever showed up about it in my local paper. As far as I know, no bodies were ever found and no arrests were ever made. But I can tell you for certain that there are places in those woods where something could hide and never be found. For the rest of the season, I didn't go back there, and I'm not sure the old man's offer was good more than one season. Even if I got a chance, I don't think I would ever go back out there alone. However, at least now I think I understand all of those warnings from my childhood. I don't think all the neighbors were really all that concerned about the old shut-in. I think they knew about those people using his land for God knows what, and they wanted to keep me and all the other kids in the area away from whatever was wandering out there. After all, who knows what somebody that disturbed in the head would do to a witness in the woods. This happened a few years ago. I was 17 years old. I had my muzzle loader and my grandfather's black powder revolver. Growing up in Ohio, in the Appalachian foothills, I was rather used to the terrain, and the big whitetail here are in those rough-to-get places. I had my day pack and a flare gun, in the low chance that I got hurt or lost. But I left my house probably around 5-ish in the morning. It was the beginning of December, and a light dusting of snow covered the fields and forest floors. I make it about 2 hours into my hike when I find a blood trail. This puts me off because this part of the woods is really hard to get to, and the closest house is mine. Curiosity got the best of me, though, so I followed it thinking one of the few bears in the area was out and about, or a pack of coyotes got a fawn. What I did find on that blood trail was an old man, early to mid-70s, who was just staring at me, if not through me. Both of my parents are first responders, so I know enough about medical attention to help a little, but as soon as I got close to him, I noticed that he wasn't the one bleeding. I could see the blood-soaked shirt he had on and his hands holding it was seeping with blood through his fingers, but there was no pool of blood. I called out to him a few times, slowly walking towards him, but I got no response. When I finally got to where he was, he looked up at me, slouched over. Passing away, I got my flare and shot into the air, and covered the man to the best of my abilities with what little I had to show respect to his death. After an hour or so, the search and rescue helicopter landed in a field close to where I was, and my dad ran over to me, and I explained everything to him. I took them to where I left the old man's body, only for it not to be there. The blanket and branches I put over him were still there, and the blood trail was even there. However, his body wasn't. To this day, my family and most search and rescue workers we have in our area won't go into that valley. I'm not sure why, but maybe that has something to do with it. So a very good friend of mine was deer hunting in rural Pennsylvania late into the evening. It was pretty dark and he was waiting for his dad to pack up and pick him up on the ATV. He was on the ground in a blind when he saw two large yellow eyes looking at him from only a few yards ahead. They stared, unmoving at him for around 20 minutes or so, and whenever he tried to shine a flashlight at them, and the brush, it seemed to conceal whatever was connected to the eyes. He couldn't see fur or a body at all. They appeared to be maybe 3 feet off the ground, so he eventually gives up and assumes it's a bobcat or something. As soon as the ATV arrives and gets close, however, the eyes stand up to a height of roughly 7 feet or so, and whatever it was makes a quick sharp turn and sprints away. It doesn't amble or gallop as a bear might, but it sprints away like someone running on a track. He believes it was a Bigfoot. I don't believe a flesh and blood Bigfoot could exist in Pennsylvania. But what do I know? What do any of you guys think? Hunting. It seems like fun to some people. I used to feel that way myself. It was never for food, but just sport. I know this sounds cliched, but I had an experience where the hunter became the hunted. In 2009, I decided to do what I often do. That meant taking a break and going somewhere to relax. When I heard that my friends had planned a hunting expedition, I immediately got on board. Since there were two of my friends going on that same trip, I figured it would be fun. We ended up going with a veteran hunter named Buck Adams, and yes, that was his real name. He told us stories about previous hunting trips where he bagged whatever he was after. Deer, bear, ruffed grouse, pheasant. He had gotten them all. He told us we were going to a secret hunting spot in western Pennsylvania, to a place where we would find some real trophies. He once got a 17-point buck there. Having a chance to grab something of that magnitude made me even more eager. When we arrived at that spot, we were split into groups of four, since there were 13 of us. Buck had his own tent. The other four were shared by three people each. The first night we were there, he said, "Go ahead and explore before you turn in. Just watch out for the werewolf." Since I didn't know how to react, I laughed nervously. A guy with us named Mark told us that a creature called the Squonk was more believable than that. Buck's face was stone cold. "I'm not kidding," he said with venom in his voice. When I asked Mark if he was really that confident that there were no werewolves, he gave me an exact reply I was expecting. "He just wants to scare us, new kids, old stories, that's the way it works." I was about to reply when we all heard a snap sound. Not knowing what it was, and not wanting to know, we all dove inside a tent. I was with Mark, Christopher, and one of my friends, Grant. Christopher whispered, "That's four people. One of you needs to find a different tent." I was about to punch him when I heard a weird guttural growl. The four of us did rock, paper, scissors to see who would go look. Grant was the first one to lose, so he peeked outside. He brought his head back inside within 1 second. His eyes were wide and he seemed to be shocked. "What's wrong?" I asked. He pointed outside. I looked and saw a terrifying sight. There was a monster there. About 8 feet tall, silver hair or fur, glowing yellow eyes and a muscular build. I was about to yell when Mark grabbed me from behind, dragged me inside the tent and quietly zipped the flap. "Okay," he whispered. "Buck wasn't trying to scare us. He was serious." We all huddled together and heard the creature stomping towards our tent. I let out a sigh of fear. Chris dug his fingers into my arm. Grant started saying Hail Marys, and Mark was letting out squeaks of fear. After 10 minutes, we all heard a rifle shot. The thing howled like a wolf and ran on two legs back into the woods. Buck unzipped our flap and asked if we were okay. We confirmed that we were, but Buck still suggested we go to a different area of the state. So we did that very next morning. Was what we saw a werewolf? I can't be positive. But it wasn't like a wolf I've ever seen. For one thing, they can't stand on two legs and they definitely aren't 8 feet tall. And they don't growl or howl in the way that thing did. I decided just to stop camping altogether after that. Think about it. If there is a werewolf out there, what else could be lurking in the woods? Thanks for listening to these creepy and downright strange hunting stories. I don't know about you guys, but if I was in story number two, I would have left a long time ago. I am very fast, personally, and I would have probably just outrun all those scary, creepy dudes in the mask. But let me know what you guys would do if you were in the woods with people like that. I actually have my own personal story that's actually pretty similar to that, that I may share in a future video if you'd be interested in hearing it. If you guys enjoyed these stories, please be sure to hit that like button, as it helps me out a ton. If you guys are new to the swamp, why not join us, subscribe, and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day, and all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a hunting story or something else, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this channel going. If you're not aware, you can download your favorite scary stories from the swamp on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about every other podcasting platform out there. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the swamp the way you do. Without you, I couldn't be doing this on a daily basis. If you made it all the way to the end, today's code word is Cody. C-O-T-Y. Comment that down below to confuse anybody who didn't make it to the end, and to also let me know you made it to the end. I love seeing how unique you guys get with your comments. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.